Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Pixar invites you to a magical world that's lost its magic.
Did you know centaurs could run 70 miles an hour?
I own a vehicle. Don't need to run.
Tom Holland and Chris Pratt.
Come, dear brother.
We're going on a quest. Two brothers.
Unicorns!
We'll bring the magic back.
Oh, no.
What happened?
Looks like you shrunk me.
Onward.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I am your host, Eddie Villanueva, and alongside me, as always, is Mr. Spencer Rabbit Unicorn Williams.
Okay. Thanks.
We got a great show in stores. We're going to be talking about the new Pixar film Onward, and we're not alone. We actually have fellow podcaster and great D&D extraordinaire, IJNU Robot, otherwise known as Amy.
Hi. I have the trash can because you called him a rabid unicorn, so I'll throw that later.
Cool.
Sure. Well,
we I'm got in a great, corner.
We got a great show in store as we got a lot to talk about. But Spencer, let them know where they can find us.
Hey, you can tune in each Wednesday morning on all your favorite streaming platforms and over on our website at filmlosophers.com when you want to check us out. Also, connect with us on our social pages at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter and Instagram at filmlosophy101.
Also, real quick, since we're in the plugging mode of plugging our socials and whatnot, big shout out to everybody who came out this past Monday to our The Office themed trivia night.
There was so many people.
Oh my gosh.
We had to close down the comic.
We closed down the shop. That says it all. Over 70 people showed up for the event. We actually had to turn some people away. It was awesome. A lot of great teams. Huh?
I got turned away.
You got
It's okay. I support all the endeavors.
And she didn't even have to leave her house for that.
Rude.
It was a great opportunity to see a lot of the great, fun fans of The Office out there. And not to mention, it was just hilarious and everybody had a great time. So big shout out to all the teams that won. Big shout out to all the people who showed up. And if you want to know about more, check out our Facebook page at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on our Instagram where we post all the pictures from the events as well as information for upcoming events. You're going to want to be aware because we got a great one coming up for next month.
What is it?
It's a secret. You got to subscribe and follow us on Facebook.
I already do, though.
Well, then I guess you didn't pay attention to the last event.
I just said I was like turned away. Rude.
Speaking of turning away, we got a great show in stores. We're going to be talking about Pixar's latest serving to all the little kids and every single person who loves great storytelling, and that is Onward. this is a great film that just debuted this past weekend. All three of us got a chance to see the film at different times. But still, nevertheless, it was a unique experience, and it's easy to say that we all had a unique experience in our own. So, before we dive into that, Spencer, set the mood here with that official synopsis goodness.
Set in a suburban fantasy world, Disney and Pixar's Onward introduce two teenage elf brothers who embark on an extraordinary quest to discover if there's still a little magic left out there.
That's right. Directed by Dan Scanlon, this film stars Chris Pratt, Tom Holland, Julia Louis-Dreyfus, and Octavia Spencer, however you pronounce it. A couple quick facts. According to director Dan Scanlon, who lost his father at a very young age, the film is inspired by the question he's always asked, who was my father? The story is set in a world with no humans. Elves, trolls, sprites, and, quote, anything that would be on the side of the van in the 70s exists in this world, stated the director. Which I think is a very appropriate thing to kind of state in terms of the aesthetic for this film. This film is very much like it's what you would expect if D&D was given to Disney and they were told, all right, Wizards of the Coast said, here, take Dungeons and Dragons and we want you to turn it into a movie.
Did you say Dungeons and the Dragons?
Dungeons and Dragons. It's D&D, not D&TD.
I was just checking. I can't see you. I'm relying solely on my ears.
I get that we're having trouble with audio listening on that end, but it's okay. It's all right.
We roll are for here. Initiative. Let's go.
D20, you're out. this really does look indicative of the whole motif of Dungeons and Dragons for kids. Like, if you were to serve it up to kids, I don't know. What do you guys think? What about the dungeon master over there on that end?
I am not Amy. A DM.
I know you're not a DM, but you do play. Actually,
I do play.
What podcast are you from, Amy?
I'm from the Capeless Crusaders.
Say that like you're no. being attacked.
I'm feeling a little attacked.
I'm trying
The last time we played D&D on the Capeless Crusaders, it was last October.
But,
and I was stuck literally in a wall, and I'm a dwarf currently because my first character got murdered by a T-Rex.
So if you're not following anything of what you just said,
I'm from the Capeless Crusaders podcast.
So Amy is a part of a podcast that focuses more on comic books and comic book inspired entities. And one of those things that they tend to do, they actually had a regularly running D&D campaign that they were live streaming on Twitch. And it was actually really cool. I'll give it that. It was actually pretty fun to watch. And so I asked, one of the reasons why Amy's on this show, aside from her wonderful banter, is I wanted her to also give her area of expertise in a couple areas. Number one, she is a seasoned D&D player.
Yes.
And that is very much a theme running through this entire film.
Very
Would you
true.
Guys agree?
Yeah.
Also, Amy is a mother of two children.
Yes.
And so the motherly aspect as well.
I'm a parent and I'm a single parent.
There.
I'm Laurel. Let's go. It's if I don't have dudes, I have little girls.
I feel like Geraldo now. Next week on... But that's not to say, you know, she has great perspective.
I come with lots of insights on varying topics that apply to this movie.
Where did you read that off of?
Your hairline.
My hairline. All right.
So yes, the tones of this movie are very indicative of D&D. Wizards of the Coast actually gets a special shout out in the end credits.
They do.
Not just for the use of two of their characters, which there's multiple Easter eggs and jokes. And if you have a tendency to like magic, like D&D.
When
or
you
even
say
if
magic.
You, the Magic the Gathering, pardon me.
You had to be specific.
Correct. So, well, if you
so
do
real
like
quick,
magic.
So let's backtrack real quick. So because you've said a lot of words that I don't know if a lot of our regular listeners will understand. So let's backtrack. So Wizards of the Coast is a company that owns both Dungeons and Dragons, as well as the one of the longest running trading card games, which is Magic the Gathering.
Which you play frequently.
Which I play frequently. And Amy does Dungeons and Dragons frequently, or as frequent as she can.
Yes.
And so she's right. There was a really great shout out to Wizards of the Coast. But like I was saying, one of the great things about this aesthetic is that it's definitely something that I think Dan Scanlon hits it on the head, you know, completely when he says, you know, anything that was on the side of a van in the 70s, because I don't think I've ever thought about like 70s vans until I saw this movie, like as of late. Mm-hmm. You know, there's always the joke or the satire of like people who are stuck in a decade. And I think that's the biggest indicator of like the 70s. Where you had magical unicorns and really weird wizards on the side of your bus or your van. So another thing that I wanted to mention was, you know, this is actually the second directorial effort from Dan Scanlon, which is actually following his debut in Pixar with Monsters University back in 2013, which had been released 7 years prior. Also, this is Julia Louis-Dreyfus's second Pixar film. Her first one was from 1998's A Bug's Life. 22 years ago.
Yeah, she's an adult. She was around.
No, I'm not saying that. No. Really? She played the mother.
She grew into a beautiful butterfly.
She was not the
She wasn't Heimlich. I'm making
I was
a reference
just say,
to Bug's Life. Calm down.
I forgot the name of the caterpillar.
That's Heimlich. And Heimlich. She was not Heimlich. She was the actual literal butterfly or the moth.
Yes, she was the mom. No, she
no,
was the
she
aunt.
Was aunt.
She was the princess. Queen aunt.
She
the
was
princess.
Atta?
Yes.
Dang, my brain.
You're fired.
Okay, go in this way.
But
I'll turn on the fan on the way out.
I have to admit, I've always been a fan of Julia Louis-Dreyfus's since her stints in Seinfeld. Mm-hmm. And then she had a really funny role in Christmas Vacation. You don't really see her much in anything else. But
she's in Veep.
I didn't watch Veep.
I didn't either.
She won awards in Veep, and I didn't watch it either, but yeah. I know that.
Yeah. She's been doing things.
I was talking
Spencer
about
Spencer on the ones and twos.
I was talking about things that I had seen. Have you seen anything else? Did you actually watch Veep?
No.
Oh, I was actually going to ask you if she was what that was all about. But yeah, it's great to see her coming back to the fold, especially in such a role that seems to fit her. Like, it suits her voice. It suits her demeanor. She had always been the type of spastic person on Seinfeld, so it just made it work for her being like an overprotective single mom. Not that that's a bad thing. It's just saying, yeah. I'm getting death stares from the person across the table over here.
I'm just confused.
Yeah, let's dive into that, Eddie. What do you mean exactly?
I actually want to kind of figure out exactly where in this entire movie she is a quote unquote overprotective mother.
She's just a mother. I mean,
you're getting yourself in trouble.
Nope.
We're not going to get anywhere at this rate. You better push forward, young fella.
Onward, as they say.
Oh, put it into over onward.
Wow. So just in a little bit of the numbers, I don't have the budget for the film, but its opening weekend brought in close to $40 million, which is great. A grand total for worldwide for this past opening weekend was at $70.1 million.
Too many Krispies.
So that's not bad.
That's nothing to sneeze at.
Yeah, especially for a non-Marvel Disney film. I think it's safe to say Pixar has really figured out how to create engaging stories. Like, yes, Disney Animation, outside of like their main properties like Mickey Mouse and Goofy, outside of that, they've made a few okay films. I mean, they've made a few good movies. I think Amy, you and I were talking, Brave was one of those that came out of Disney Animation, right?
Yeah, which Scanlan was actually one of the senior creative advisors for Brave.
Okay.
As well as Cars.
Cars.
Big Cars.
But it seems like Pixar is the one who really has put the animated film in a whole nother genre in terms of creating engaging story that really touches on many different levels. I mean, we could probably go back, and mind you, this isn't a Pixar episode, but it is something to really take notice of. Pixar has been dishing out from the very beginning, like hit after hit after hit. I can't really remember a time when a Pixar film didn't make me like choke up and almost cry.
This one?
Well, we'll talk about that in a little bit. Hey, don't get ahead of me there, mister.
The Good Dinosaur was not Pixar, correct?
The Good Dinosaur was Pixar. I haven't actually seen that one, to be honest.
Ooh.
I think that's like the only one I've missed.
I've seen every single one to date, so feelings. But I don't think that one did as well as people had hoped either for the studio. Just saying.
That's got me wondering now. Yeah, because it's essentially part. So it is because of the reason that it's a part of the Pixar theory. That's the only reason why I remember.
Yes.
So oddly enough, I adhere to the good Pixar theory. I believe it's truth through and through. It is my Bible, if you will.
Oh, by the way, the budget for Onward was $135 million.
Oh well, there you go. I mean, they're well on their way to making that.
It's modest, but it's not knock it out the park. But again, as you said, it wasn't a Marvel opener.
So. Yeah, and that's one of the things to really kind of take note of. When it comes to Pixar, they're creating their own unique things, but it's not the only time they've ever created a sequential film from a sequential follow-up to a film was Incredibles.
Mm.
That's the only sequel that Pixar has ever made.
Wait.
What about Toy Story?
Aside from Toy Story.
Or Cars.
Did they make, so was that before?
Not Planes.
No, was
Cars.
Was that 2 and 3?
Forgot about Planes.
I know.
Oh my gosh. I think everybody forgot about Planes.
we don't talk about Rusty Crop Hopper.
You're right. Actually, you got Cars and Toy Story, but
And Incredibles, and that's been it.
Yeah.
And Finding Dory.
Oh,
Lord Above. So cool. Then that theory is completely blown out of the water. That's true. And I think those are really, I think they've really created a momentum for themselves to really just amp up exactly the expectation for Pixar, because you look at Pixar and you think, you know, wow. Like, I don't think I've ever experienced, but now that you're mentioned, I might not want to see The Good Dinosaur. But yeah, I've never experienced a Pixar film that's really tugged at like the heartstrings and really made it, made the effort. And I think coming back around to Onward, I think Onward is one of those movies that really makes the attempt to do such a thing. Like, it really does follow through the what's known as the Pixar storytelling method. And we'll get into that in a little bit. But before we do, I want to get into some expectations. So I want to figure out what your guys' thoughts were before going into the theater. Let's go ahead and start with the newcomer over here, Amy.
I'm a newcomer.
You're a newcomer.
Oh my gosh. So
what were your expectations before seeing the movie?
Honestly, I actually had really low expectations.
Oh, really?
Just 100% transparent and honest. With this movie, it wasn't... I was excited. I was intrigued a little bit about the premise because how hot of a commodity D&D and nerd culture has become, especially with Wizards, Wizards of the Coast, and you know, Stranger Things. There's been a resurgence of the late 70s, early 80s. So getting into RPGs and being able to kind of see that, I was intrigued. But other than that, I wasn't like, oh my gosh, I need to go see this. This wasn't the Incredibles 2 like trailer where I was like, yes. And I didn't really know kind of what to expect aside from we have, you know, Tom Holland being elf Tom Holland. So I really came into it kind of without expectations. So it turned out to be something kind of nice and surprising for me on that one. But we'll get to that later. But Spencer.
What about you, Spence? What were your expectations?
So I was mostly on board for this because it had a Pixar. It was a Pixar movie.
That was it?
Yeah.
They slapped a Pixar label on it and you're like, I'm game.
Yeah. That's basically the whole thing.
This is how Marvel got you, Spencer.
Well, I mean, they just have a consistent record of generally high story, like high level storytelling. So
word.
Like, you know, it's mm-hmm. not mm-hmm. super often that mm-hmm. you would expect them to just like, you know, oh, this movie's going to be complete garbage. Like,
but then again, we did not see The Good Dinosaur. So
okay, but again, that's only one movie out of how many have they released in the last 20 years? That's still a good record, even if
no,
The Good Dinosaur
No, it's a great
sucks.
Record.
I don't know.
It's not a terrible movie. There are technical and animation styles that you see that they have progressed that they used in The Good Dinosaur to enhance other movies. Like I see what happened in The Good Dinosaur translated into Brave all the time.
Wow,
like
okay.
I have no question about it.
They've released, by the way, 22 movies.
Jiminy Crispers.
The same amount as Marvel.
So it's, well, and that explains also why after the Disney Renaissance, Pixar, there's like nothing from Disney for such a long time. But yeah, like the Good Dinosaur isn't a sucky movie. It's just not the first one you're like, oh, Pixar movies, what are we thinking of? So mm-hmm. it's come at it the same way like I came at Onward, come kind of at it for The Good Dinosaur. It's dinosaurs.
It's dinosaurs.
It's dinosaurs. What's your expectations over there, hair fellow?
What?
German.
What is with my hair?
That's all I can see. I'm short.
Somebody's got to run the ones and twos over here. My expectations, honestly, is I really was hoping that this movie was going to be something I hadn't experienced before with Pixar. I didn't expect it to be a hit. Just because it was Pixar, because with Spencer, you know, moaning and groaning as of late with his upset feelings with Marvel and the trailers and the misleading, he's rubbed off on me and I've grown skeptical because I'm like, yeah, well, they say it's a good movie, but is it really? Are they lying to me? I've allowed Spencer to let his mindset absorb into mine.
It's not mine. Is fact. They actively lied to us in a trailer. What more do you want?
They cut it so we see what they want us to see. I see his logic.
And that's almost like a lie.
Well, let's be honest. This Onward trailer, until the recent ones after the movie came out, from my view, it was nothing I wanted to see. What the emphasis they were pushing in the trailers was not what ended up happening in the film.
Well, and for me, being a fan of... So
I'm on that Spencer boat, but I'm a cockeyed optimist. So, yeah, that glass has water.
But are you seeing one or two glasses because of that cocked eye?
Holy.
being a fan of Magic the Gathering for myself, there was a lot of things that I just didn't want to see used as just a gag. Like I didn't want to see. So in Magic the Gathering, and it's somewhat similar within D&D, but like you have mana, which you use to spend to cast a character or cast a creature. You have enchantments. You have artifacts. You have all these different elements, and they all play a specific role throughout the whole game. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want something to be like just used as, oh, we're going to throw this in, like, oh, I bet you're going to use mana. Like, I didn't want the game that I played, I didn't want it to be made fun of, you know?
Okay. But it's destined to be made fun of.
Well, see, that's the thing.
Like, so is mine. I just learned to accept that people are going to make fun of the things that I love, and I can't change their opinion, but my opinion is,
I mean, I don't need to know your life story. I'm just saying. Here's the... No.
Garbage can. Go.
What I'm saying... No, but what I'm saying is the validity of how I feel about my own fandom. It's like, it's my fandom that I have, and I defend it as I want to because of the fact that it's something I grew up with, something I did as a kid, and... It goes back to, like, as a child, like when I was younger, I played Magic the Gathering and I used to get made fun of for playing it then. And now because it's like mainstream popular and it's like, oh, it's in everybody's, you know, oh, everybody thinks it's cool to be the nerd now. And I'm like, I was being a nerd way back when I was getting bullied for being a nerd. And I, for me, it's one of those things where I didn't want to have to see another opportunity where the cheap gag is, well, we're just going to do what everyone else does and point fun at the nerdy things, you know? Do you get what I'm saying, Spencer? Because you look rather confused here.
I mean, I think so.
It's like, okay, here's the thing. Because I can maybe make it relate to you in a little bit better.
Okay.
So you've been a fan of Kingdom Hearts.
Oh, gosh, don't bring this up.
Oh,
so
no, because...
You've been a fan of Kingdom Hearts...
I can relate to this, though.
And there's a specific shirt that you have.
Oh, that shirt?
That it's I think it's an abomination.
Wait, what's the shirt?
It's
go ahead.
It's a mashup of a keyblade in the stone from like The Legend of Zelda. So it looks
so it
like...
works. Yeah.
No, it does not.
It
so
does.
Here's the thing.
It's the love of two games.
No, it's not. So here's
well,
the
apparently
thing.
Apparently, it's dark and scary where he's going. And
it
he
is.
Needs to take more so, than just a cup of coffee.
Here's the thing. What? Here's the thing. If I were to like, because I give you a hard time about it because it's funny and I like getting you upset. It's a great thing, by
rude.
The way.
Rude.
No, it's the same.
It's my favorite pastime. But
still rude.
But here's the thing: if it were anybody else who were to like amp up like the ridiculousness of your shirt and mention it to you, I think you would be upset. I wouldn't go
I
as far
care.
As to. I wouldn't say. I
you
would,
want to know why I don't care.
I want to know why he doesn't care. Let's go.
I went to Disneyland, and I was wearing that shirt, and Mickey Mouse pointed out that my shirt was awesome, and I was happy about
it. You mean
that.
The 17-year-old that was on her last shift and ready to go, so she had to make you happy so she could walk
firstly,
back to her?
Yeah, Gwen was awesome about it.
Wait, firstly, there are no 17-year-old masked
hey.
Or unmasked characters at Disneyland. Check your facts.
Ooh, fact check.
You know what? Why don't you go and take your butt back to Anaheim?
Why don't you roll for initiative? Because you haven't finished.
Anyway, but I'm saying like a fandom that you have, like if it was picked at and nitpicked and then it was displayed in a property where it was like raked over the coals to be made fun of, you would be hesitant to want to see it.
Yes, but Kingdom Hearts deserves it sometimes.
Yes, it does.
Like, you're gonna look, be honest.
Look,
oh my gosh.
We're not gonna go through the whole Nightmare Before
we
Christmas
talk
level.
Talk about this afterwards.
Okay, let's talk about the 8-bit and that jump with them shoes. I still can't.
Oh my gosh.
As many times I've played it, those shoe jumps kill me. Whee!
So,
oh, my brain.
I say all that to say, and that's just, that was my mindset. Like, really coming okay. into it, that was a big worrisome part for me because it's the easy gag. Like, for me, making fun of the nerd is the overused trope in every film. And I just didn't want Disney to reach for the low-hanging fruit. Be like, oh, well, we can just do this because we're doing this and all the other stuff. So, but do you understand what I'm saying, Amy?
I understand. I don't have to agree with it. Your opinion is your own. Different strokes for different folks.
Wow. All right. I mean, just because you stand out doesn't mean I can see you. So,
wow.
Oh, gosh.
This is going to be a bloodbath.
I am just preparing for the worst because the last time we had Amy here, this turned on a 2-on-1 constant barrage.
Oh, as if the podcast isn't normally one person just attacking
me. You attack him constantly.
Yes, thank you.
Constantly.
Thank you.
Well, look at it this way, Spencer. As long as it keeps going this way, it won't be you this episode. Mm. It'll be her.
So in other words, do you know what? I'm fine being the shield. I don't mind. Mm-mm. But seriously, you are like just straight up rude. Fingers all over this. No.
I mean, I see something over the screen, but I can't tell.
Yeah, I'm short enough. Thanks.
But so that's honestly where my mindset was. I just didn't want to come into the film and just be like berated with like, oh, well, this and this and this, and you got to wear this cloak to make yourself look like a wizard. You have to roll for initiative or something like that. Like, we've seen that done already. And
I like rolling for initiative. It tells me who I'm fighting first.
But you see, that's the thing, though. It wouldn't have, like, in my mind, if it was used for that, it wouldn't have been a natural thing. Not everybody knows what rolling for initiative is. And if it was used for comedic effect, how would you feel about rolling for initiative?
The same way I do now. I don't give a cluck. Roll for initiative.
Wow. So jumping into the movie.
I'm a nerd. I'm okay with that. But jump into the movie.
Let's jump into the movie.
2 feet.
Let's go
two
and talk.
Really big shoes.
Wow.
I'm sorry. We need to get him a pair of those shoes.
Oh my gosh.
Right.
That'd be amazing.
So are goals. Let's do it.
I can wait for you guys. It's all good. Right. Okay. So talking about after the film. So what were your first impressions after you left the film, Spencer?
Government regulators are not doing enough jobs to keep corporations from buying other business aspects. We need better regulators, because that's the whole thing I was thinking about with that Simpsons short. That was ridiculous.
Thank you.
All right.
That was so ridiculous.
Okay. So we're going to do this.
High
okay.
Five.
So
yes. Yes. Okay. Oh my gosh. That
so
was perfect.
Real quick. So before the Onward film,
to talk about disappointment? I was like, oh.
So before
dang.
Before the Onward film,
and
there is
like after 25 minutes of trailers,
and then you get that seven minutes.
That's an egregious act all in itself. There should not be. I'm telling you, the movie theaters need to pick up the idea of letting people know this is the start time of the when the lights go down. And this is the start time of the film.
I'm just coming in 15 minutes
late. I come in
15
to 20 minutes
late
now. I freak out if I'm more than 20 minutes late because I'm like, shoot, I'm going to miss something.
Well, I used to be, Spencer will tell you, I used to be the type of neurotic person that needed to be at the movie theaters at a certain time. I needed to be there at the exact time that the movie was about to start so that way we could walk in. And that was when like trailers were like at 15 minutes. And even then it was a lot.
Yeah.
And now we're at like 25, 30 minutes before the film, that's like a whole quarter of the movie runtime.
Yeah.
Yep.
Nobody needs that mess. Movie
Amen.
Theater people, owners, whatever, if you're listening to this, cut it out. Like, I just want to get to the movie. Seriously. But before the film starts, there was a short film, as per the norm for most Pixar films. Usually it's something that has to do with another property, or it's something that is unique and it's displaying unique filmmakers like Bao or things like that.
Oh my god.
But this one,
little dumpling. You want to go get some Bao afterwards?
Oh my gosh.
No, whatever I think about that, I'm just horrified. She ate her child.
In one fell swoop too.
We'll have the talk afterwards. Bao.
But the short in this one was actually a Simpsons short.
Mm-hmm.
And take that with a grain of salt, if you will. The Simpsons are now a part of the Disney universe, and they have now debuted a short film deemed okay for children's, visual and auditory consumption. And mind you, it's a really weird short because it's very much outside of the realm of what The Simpsons usually, you know, delves into. Mm-hmm. So that makes it really, really awkward. But at the same time, this does not fit in the Disney universe. Just because you own it doesn't mean you have to use it. It's like, yeah, the people who create viruses and whatnot, they don't use it just because they have it. You put it away and you store it for safekeeping until one day when you actually need it to sell it off or something. I don't know.
Are we making Wreck-It Ralph references?
We're making coronaviruses references.
Oh, so Wreck-It Ralph 2 was the other one that they did a sequential.
Oh, my God.
We found another one.
What?
Sorry. I was thinking about sequential ones, and you're talking about viruses, and, you know, you store them, you put them away until you need to, like, sell them, and then I thought of Wreck-It Ralph 2, where they go to the dark web and they buy the virus to put in the game, and
putting it together right there.
Yeah.
There you go.
Pixar.
So we're figuring it out. So I don't know. It's one of those things where The Simpsons needs to be separate from the Disney enclave. Like, everything that we've seen from Disney thus far does not have to include The Simpsons. Like, I don't get it. I don't see why they had to do that other than to show off, like, hey, look what we got. It's like that scene from Pirates of the Caribbean where Jack Sparrow's dancing around. I got a jar of dirt. I got a jar of dirt. It makes no sense.
Yeah. And it's just, it's really weird shorts because they just, like, Disneyized, like, The Simpsons. And It comes across as very weird. And also not funny, which is wild, seeing as how The Simpsons started as shorts.
Exactly. I mean, I'm in the boat, too, that it reminded me very much with Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. Or it's Honey, either I Blew Up the Baby or
Honey,
I Shrunk the Kids.
Honey, I Shrunk the Kids with the
The Roger Rabbit Baby Herman short that was in front of it.
Yeah.
And it was out of place, but it made me go, Mom, what is that? And when I saw Onward, I was like, this just opened. Yes,
yeah.
Disney does now own The Simpsons, but you've just opened a ball of wax to all of these parents who brought their children to a Pixar movie.
Opened a ball of wax.
Yes.
Not a jar of worms.
I thought a ball of wax because I have a child that's also doing dissection in her biology class. And so my brain went there to, like, opening things and.
A ball of wax is the first.
Well,
okay,
it would have been an owl pellet, but we're not going to. That it's a whole thing that now has to be opened and addressed by parents who, in that grand scheme of purity, innocence, Pixar, blah 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 blah. They came with the expectation that the short before this movie was going to be something that they remembered and were able to tell their kids. It's like the you're looking at Night and Day, the clouds with the storks, like all of those Pixar shorts, and suddenly it's like Simpsons movie.
Because now you're going to have to include, and it's a certainty, the next volume they do for the Pixar shorts is going to have to include The Simpsons short in it.
Oh, my gosh. I didn't even think about that.
So now every time people go back and they watch those and rewatch those, The Simpsons is a part of that, you know, great level of storytelling that we've seen. I mean,
well, on the flip side, it's Disney, so they could just take whatever they want out.
True.
But it's Avengers trailer. We didn't want it anymore. It went away.
Wow.
True.
I don't think they will, though. I think they'll keep it in there because they've kept the Frozen ones in there.
Mm-hmm.
And
well,
those
you
are just
skip over those ones.
No, but they're a part of them. That's what I'm saying. They are a part of that particular of those particular collections.
Yeah,
so when you watch them, you'll see the Frozen ones in there as well.
Wait, Olaf's Frozen Adventure isn't in the collection.
Is that a short?
That was the 7-minute crazy one that you watched?
That was
the one
that
made you...
Wait, that was 7 minutes.
No.
That's 30 minutes.
No, that was the Happy Merry Holly Jolly Season's Greetings here. Yeah, that was
the
22-minute
one.
That was the one that you hated.
Because it was 22 minutes.
No.
That one's not... That's not in the collection, no.
But
that's literally
the
whole movie on itself.
They called that a short.
Yeah, which was insane, but we won't get back into that.
Yeah, I don't...
I didn't mean to bring it up like that.
I don't think that they'll ever actually not put that in any collection because it's been created... And it's there.
Again, they have Song of the South. Nobody's seen that.
Because that's locked in a vault and not allowed
to
come out.
I know where to go get one of those. You want on VHS?
That is locked in a vault and not allowed to come out.
In America, in the UK, it's everywhere.
Well, let me know the next time you go. So
I got you. Wait, do you actually want a copy, or are we just saying this?
No, why would I want a copy of that?
I don't know.
That's horrible. Okay, back to Onward. So, yes, the short was really weird. It was about Maggie finding love. It was a cute little story. Here's the thing. If this story was just a general story told by some character that was brand new and fresh, it would have been great. But this is Maggie. Wasn't Maggie the one who killed Mr. Burns?
In one of the versions,
shot.
Yes.
Or shot Mr. Burns?
Shot Mr. Burns, yes. Correct.
Isn't she the one who shot Mr. Burns?
Yes.
This child is a murderer. Why
no,
is she
no, he's alive? Alive.
So no.
I'm sorry. Just because they come back doesn't mean the action didn't
no,
happen.
No. It technically, because you can't try her, it would be double jeopardy. So she didn't technically kill him. She, and the intent to murder has to be there. So if we're going into
okay.
all of that
so
dynamic.
So she's an attempted murderer.
There you
okay,
go.
Okay, great.
It could
the
be a
child
crime
is
of
still
action.
Violent. It's still, the, yeah. It's
Have
still,
you seen her brother and her father?
Are you adding to my case, or are you taking away? What is it that you're trying to do? Because I'm trying to say this is not a
I'm trying
family
to put it into
that
O
is,
for Onward.
This is not the family that is necessary to add to the Disney enclave of short films or even properties right now. Like, I don't think we've gotten The Simpsons to a place where they are actually ready for Disney consumption. For Disney, the Disney demographic consumption.
For mainstream Disney consumption?
Yeah.
That's a Miramax Max problem all over again.
See, that's no, I haven't really seen any of the recent seasons, so I don't know what they're doing.
Oh, same here. I haven't either. But it's all on Fox.
I'm talking about like 90s Simpsons because that's the most recent that I've got.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen. Yeah, well, either way, that's not the case. But yeah. Yes, it was a very questionable choice to go the route of including a Simpsons short before Onward. Mm-hmm. So yeah, yeah. I don't know what the structure was there. I don't know what the thinking was there. But after that, we get into the film Onward, and I think we were going with you, Spencer, about first impressions after the film.
Okay, so yeah, I was
after
thinking...
the whole fiasco of the short film. Now we can get back into talking about the movie. So can you please continue?
Okay, so I was thinking about all that, and then what was it? A couple of days passed, and then did you call me or something?
Yeah, on Sunday.
Yeah, so he called me, and he was like, "So what did you think of the movie?" And my answer was, "What movie?"
Well, there you go.
I completely forgot I had seen it.
That says enough, I think. I mean, so. I you know what? I have to agree with Spencer. I think this movie makes a virtuous attempt at becoming something unique and something that is meaningful. But I think there's just too much. There's just too much in the movie that creates any kind of special connecting point with the characters and whatnot. And I mean, personally, it didn't grab me like the other ones did.
Yeah.
You know, and that's just the truth from my end. I see disapproving eyes on the other side of the table.
I'm waiting for you to finish. This is your time to
no,
sparkle
ahead.
And shine and shimmer and whatever else you
want
to do.
We're still going to get into the conversation, but what's up?
No, it's your thoughts after the movie.
No, that was it. Like it just
didn't grab you.
It didn't grab me.
You didn't cry.
It wasn't like it didn't have the effective emotionality that like things like Inside Out had, or Coco, or like seriously, all those movies that really created the or even Toy Story 3. Like Toy Story 3 was one of those ones that you're like, my heart. Like you.
No, the what? Toy Story 3 was one that people went into counseling for after it was over.
Yes, we did.
Like,
yes,
oh my gosh,
did.
These toys are gonna commit suicide. Oh my god.
They were at peace and were going towards the fire. Oh,
they're
gosh.
Coming to the light. But I those types of movies had strong emotionality, and maybe we didn't always connect with the subject matter. Maybe it was something that was far off removed from who we are or whatever situation we were in life, but they still created a connecting point for us. This movie, yes, it was on a sense, on a level where it could have been connective to a lot of the things that are going on, but I think there was just too many levels of those connecting points that just made it kind of like, okay, cool.
What do you mean by too many levels?
Well, because there were so many different things going on in this movie and so many different frames of like, okay, now there's a... So we'll get into that then.
Okay.
I'll just...
Okay, we'll come back to that.
But in the film, we...
I know what he's saying, so I'm okay with continuing onward.
All right. Well, continuing onward, the film has, obviously, like we said, Chris Pratt, who plays the older brother, Barley, Tom Holland, who is the younger brother, Ian. Ian is played by, like I said, Tom Holland. The mother, Laurel, was played by Julia Louis-Dreyfus, and the Manticore is played by Octavia Spencer. The couple of the great things about this film is that there's great setup. So I have to admit, the film does a great job of setting everything up. It does a great job of like creating this level, this platform of we're going to do something epic, and we're going to have a great story on you know, unveil for you. So I have to admit that. Like, the beginning setups of this movie was great. I don't know. What'd you guys think?
Yeah, I thought the beginning was pretty strong.
Well, and that's...
I know
for you, Spence, they don't stick the landing, but I'm just talking about, you know, grabbing hold of the bar. That's all I'm saying. Like, did they actually...
Yes, like, the beginning of the movie, yeah. I feel like that was like, okay, you know, I know what's going on. I know where we're going. It's just... Once, like, they put the clock on, it's like, ah, oh, we gotta go save our dad so he's not just a pair of legs. Like, that might have changed how I felt about the movie, because I kind of just, like, that clock was very anxiety-inducing for me.
Which I think was part of the thing that they were trying to get you to connect with Tom Holland's character, Ian, who is, I don't know if we can, a character description counts as a spoiler, does it?
No, go ahead.
So... He is high strung. He is the classic overachiever. He's kind of scared of his own. There's moments and mannerisms that Ian has that are indicative of Tom Holland in Spider-Man, like in Homecoming, that you watch. And I was like, yeah, he did that in real life. That's cute. But he is so much anxiety naturally that once the clock hits there, anybody that has any sense of anxiety, suddenly you're like, oh, crap. Oh, gosh. Okay. How much time do we got on the clock? Did this little sidebar waste it? Nope. We're still good. Oh, we're still good.
Oh my gosh. The sidebars, when they stopped to dance, I was like,
get out the rest.
Sorry, do we have time for this?
I'm not.
Get back in the van.
And I think that you're
they
right.
Did, they lost the top.
Because once the, like, you're right. Once it began to be a matter of just time, you're, as the audience, just looking at the time. You're focused on just when that clock runs out. Not only is this this spell going to, you know, lose its effectiveness,
top hat man.
It's going to lose its effectiveness, but also that's when the movie's going to end. And so you're aware of two fronts. You're aware of, you know, the resolution for the characters in the film, and secondly, the resolution of the film itself. And it felt like, I don't know about you guys, I'm hyper aware when it comes to time in a film, which is why, like, I hate / love what is the name of that movie, the one that Christopher Nolan did about the battle with the soldiers on the beach.
What, Dunkirk?
Dunkirk, yes.
I was like, not Normandy.
I know. No. I was about to
say, like,
Normandy.
It's World War II. It's World War II. I know that.
No.
It's World War II.
Yeah, Dunkirk. That's why I hate / really love that movie, because it does a great job of creating this sense of tension, and you're aware of the time because of the ways they you know, allow you to relate to the time. And it goes back and forth, and it's great. Coming back to this, I was like, the sun was the indicator, because there was a constant, like, reminder of the sun. Like, oh my gosh, it's going down. It literally felt, by the way, that the last half of the second part of the day took
longer.
Forever. Like, the sun stood still for a reason. But
it could have been daylight savings time.
True. Very, very true.
No, it could have been.
What?
It could have been the summer solstice, which means that we had, it would have been the longest amount of time, unless we did the equinox. I'm sorry.
So,
I think about stuff like that.
But
time,
honestly,
tension,
like
anxiety.
Time, it really did play a factor. It's almost like time was a whole secondary character all on its own, you know, to be quite frank. Mm-hmm. Can you agree with that, Spence?
Yeah.
Because I, for myself, I know when I was watching it, I was, like I said, I was aware. But at the same time, it felt like that was the push to get to the resolution. Normally, a lot of these Pixar films, the film has a natural cadence to it. So you get there as the film builds towards the end. Like, you get to those resolutions. Take, for instance, the story, the film Inside Out. The film has its own cadence as it's following through. And there's no rush halfway through the film, or, you know, after a third of the film. But as you start building towards those tail ends, that's when the intensity builds, and you find yourself with Riley, and Riley's like running away from school and like, why is she running away? And everything's happening in her mind. And those two are indicative of that timer beginning and the intensity building, and the cadence is met at that point. So when you get to the point to where she finally has the big moment with her parents, it feels rewarding because in that moment you are a part of that. You were there. This feels like a supermarket sweep. Like we got like 30 seconds to grab the green beans and the steak to get back to our station to cook. What, Amy?
First off, kudos to Supermarket Sweep. That was my jam.
I love the show as a kid.
Supermarket Sweep.
Shoot, like, move over, guys. Grocery games. Give us Supermarket Sweep. So I do see what both of you say about time. And additionally, for somebody who naturally has high anxiety, it creates additional tension where it's not needed. Mm-hmm. But I also, from a D&D perspective, campaigns can take months at a time because you get people going off on sidebars and off on tangents. And once you set a timer for something, you automatically increase your pace of storytelling because whoever is... It can be your cleric, it could be your leader, essentially, for your band. They are mindful of the time, and so is your DM, so is your storyteller. And it helps keep the pace, even though it might be quickened, it helps try to keep everybody more focused. So yeah, while we have that really random sidebar where they get out of the van and they start dancing, they use it as a space for conflict resolution, because if they were in the van in their mode of transport still trying to figure out the argument, we were just going to have a whole big blow up.
But I think though I hear what you're saying, but as a player, as somebody who plays D&D, having an experienced DM knows how to create that level of intensity with a time parameter on it. Not by saying, guys, you got 10 minutes, you got to finish this now. Like, no, they don't do that.
No, they tell you have 10 minutes or you're going to die.
Well, they have ways to implement it.
Which essentially they did in the movie, was, look, we have 24 hours. And the first line of that spell for the visitation is, one day is all we get.
But the
so
thing is,
literally,
but it's an experience.
That is your one day is all you get.
But it's
so
an experienced DM that knows how to.
Anxiety-driven Ian knows. You can keep trying to cut me off, and I'll keep talking.
I can just mute
you.
I can just mute you all back here. I have no problem muting you.
I will lean aggressively.
I will remove your microphone. No, but what I'm saying is, I get what you're saying, and you're making a valiant effort, but I still think. An experienced DM, an experienced game player, an experienced storyteller does not put the timer on the window and say, this is it, blah. Like, they know how to incorporate it into the story. Like you were saying, you have 10 minutes or you're going to die. Like, that's an element, maybe not so roughly, but that's an element that's used as the storytelling. In movies, if you put a timer on the screen, then you better expect most of the people to focus on the timer. Case in point, 24. 24 is a great example. They literally have the title 24, meaning 24 hours. The clock is literally in the corner. You focus on the time. Yes.
I'm maintaining holding up my hand since nobody can see this because I'm actually being respectful of your time and your opinion. It's actually a kind of a question. Do both of you so believe once they've given that time, like that cutoff, that... that's the end, boom, there's nothing after? Like, do you not give that space for whoever to wrap up, have an epilogue or anything within a story?
But that's
there should have been.
No. But, well, and that's what I'm asking, because...
But that's the thing, though.
I already knew, once you finish a campaign, if you tell me we have 10 minutes to raid the dungeon, get to the altar or into the throne room with Anorak, and then we have
battle.
Are
you quoting Ready Player One now?
I was about to go very hard.
You're about to say, why do I know that name?
You know that name. It's also D&D character, so gotcha, buddy. But... if you're doing that entire run and say you have 10 minutes to do that run, even once you get to the end and your 10 minutes is done, there's still the epilogue after that. And I think maybe that's what I was coming in with, that perspective of, yes, we're on a time crunch. I understand that. Some of the parts where I was like, okay, you probably didn't need to stop for that. And no, you didn't need to go to the bathroom that bad. Like, I got where those were a little bit lollygaggy to try to let them have space to put in some more gags and to flesh out things. But I always knew that even at the end of the quest, there was still going to be space to see something at the end. So do you guys not feel that way when they suddenly give you a timer? Like, is this 24? Like, that's it? Like,
no, I just wanted him to see his dad. Okay. So I'm okay. Like, you guys are wasting time. I knew the movie wasn't going to end, like, you know, at the end of the time. But, like, I was thinking that, like, you know, they're going to have their wrap up with the two brothers, whatever. But, like, we need to get there now.
And
so, it's like him, naturally, where it's like, time. I have to be... When it's, I say 9:30, be there at 9:30. Like that type of thing?
No, it's, so the way I see it is, if you are a skilled enough storyteller, you're
experienced enough.
Skilled. Because it takes
wisdom.
Anybody can be in the game long enough, but if you're not skilled, then there's no point in continuing.
But it can also take wisdom to understand how to apply it.
There are people who have been playing the game and still don't know how to do it well. I have played against Magic the Gathering players who have been playing for 20 years, and I can still beat them in 3 turns.
And are you ranked?
Yeah.
Without using your Joker's Wild deck?
Yeah. You asked.
I am intrigued.
So here we go. But what I'm saying is a skilled and seasoned storyteller will have the ability to incorporate time as a facet of the story and not the driven dynamic of the story. And if you're looking at creating a whole story totally based on time, then you have to have a strong enough story that surpasses what people see in time itself. If I'm so take for instance, like I was saying, 24 was a very unique story where the whole season took over the course of 24 hours. And yes, the clock was in the corner of the show most of the episodes. However, the story was dynamic enough and engaging enough that I began to just dive in because I wanted to see the resolution. The point of the story was I wanted to see the resolution of that at the end of the time clock because there was so much happening and I was fully invested. If you don't have a story that fully has the engagement of the audience, then time is all people are having on their minds. Can we at least agree on that? Madam arguing over there?
Oh, no. Spencer and I are exchanging looks because, I mean... I can see your point, and perhaps at this junction, the focus of time became too much of a focus for many moviegoers, especially ones that aren't me.
It's true.
So, I mean, different strokes for different folks.
I was just going to say the quote that you stole from me. Yes, different strokes for different folks.
You say it every time you disagree with Spencer.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's your way it's your way of capping an argument. Going, I'm right. Your opinion.
No, I have my opinion. He has
exactly.
His.
Exactly. But he's like, I'm not going to fight you. Let's quell this right now. So yes,
different strokes for different folks. So
no, but there we go.
Mind you, I am always willing to see the other side of a coin, and yes, I can see how looking past the time and allowing the dynamic of the story. And the time itself be a secondary character and that add to the story element. I can see that, but it has to work. Like, in all honesty, it has to work. And if it is not 100% on the nose working well, then all I'm seeing is time. Like, case in point, like Spencer was mentioning, when they jump out of the van, and it's kind of like it's a dragging kind of element of the story, because it's like, come on, this could have been done in the van. Why did this have to happen here? And then there's a dance party, and I'm like, I don't get why the dance party had to happen outside. Or what. There was a lot of elements that had me more conscientious of time rather than the dynamic of the brothers. Mm. And that's where it kind of became obvious to me that I'm not as engaged to this story as I was hoping to be. And it's the truth. I mean, I don't know. What do you think, Spence?
He's thinking. Shush your face. Let him talk.
Okay. Yeah. So, yeah, I think this movie, like, because it put that timer up there, it kind of did distract me from, like, enjoying moments with the brothers that I think I might have if I was more relaxed about it. I don't know. Maybe I'm just, like, well, yeah, I am an anxious person, so I think that's probably the cause of why I just like, you know, let's go. Let's stop the arguments. You've only got a certain amount of time. Let's do it.
Well, and like I said, it has to be one of those elements where it honestly has to work. Like, time is a factor in several of these movies that we've seen, whether if it's like, I don't know, whether if it's the cop who's trying to save the hostage people who he only has like till midnight and then the bomber's going to blow this up. Or this is happening because he has to save his mom because he's got to get back in time to give her the medicine or else she's going to die. Or I'm not saying actual. I don't know if those are actual movie. Like,
see,
in my mind,
you're
just
missing the entire, like, the big sticking point that you could have used as an argument and the junction and how time is played differently in two Pixar movies.
Well, I know how time
Coco,
is.
No, Coco.
Yes, I know. I was going to get to that because I do have another. If you look at the if you look at the notes, there's
Coco
actually
is not in the notes.
A, well, it is
Coco
in my head. So here's the thing.
Oh, no.
So, but
do you want me to throw this pillow?
Yeah. Think about it.
So the time in Coco is much more as though it is 24 hours. It doesn't feel like they're forcing you as quickly to get from place to place.
Well, see, that's the thing, though. Yeah. It's not 24 hours. It is until sunrise. And that is not a definitive amount of time. All you know is that in Coco, when the sun rises, he is indefinitely going to say, stay in the land of the dead.
So essentially,
that's all you know.
If they had said at sunset, because they kept emphasizing sunset, but as soon as he put the 24 hours on the clock,
if they would have put like
that sense of urgency,
if they would have said you have 12 hours and then whatever, then it would have been like, all right, I'm kind of focused over here. But then Coco is a very engaging story, and it's in its own right. What? Nah, yada. No. but Coco in itself is an engaging story. And if they added that time element, it honestly probably would have played a factor in my experience with it. But because they were smart in the way they went about doing it, to where there's never a mention of definitive time, it is a stopping point. When we reach this stopping point, which we don't know when that stopping point is happening, we just know the signs of when that stopping point is there. So that's the way it works with Coco.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, take another one, for instance, like Cars. Cars is another interesting one. Huh?
I said I didn't see Cars, but go ahead.
Well, like with Cars, this race car is stuck in the middle of nowhere, and he's there, and he doesn't know if he wants to go back or whatever.
No.
He's got to go back. What?
That's not the first Cars. He gets stuck in a town because he falls asleep and falls out of his truck. He's being towed across the country for a big race.
And he ends up
messing up the town, so he has to do penance and fix the road. And
but
so
the time is there. The time frame is there. You know that there is a big race coming up.
You don't know when
it
is,
you don't
is,
know
though.
When. Exactly. You're proving my point. You don't know when, but you know it's imminent. And that is the dynamic of when the stopping point is, when that race is over. So you don't know when he's going to get to the race, and you don't know how long the race is going to take. But you know once the race is over, that is the point in which they're all trying to get to. And that leads back to my whole point. The fact that time is such a prevalent part of this, it has to play second fiddle to a grand story. And without a grand story, all we're watching is the clock. And I dropped the mic. That's it.
I know. I was giving him space. Go for it, Spence.
I don't know. Because, like, I think you brought up a good point with Coco. Is that, like, for the majority of the movie, I couldn't really tell how much time has passed at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think that's probably what changes here, is that I can tell, without the characters even saying anything, how much time has passed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think that's probably because I can keep my own internal clock.
Yeah.
That's what's causing me to just, like, you know, let's go.
Well, and even more so with Coco, you have the characters telling you, like, they are the indicator as when the clock is winding down. In Coco, you know, it's getting worse. It's not blatant like, oh my gosh, we have, you know, 3 hours and 57 minutes left. It's not like that. It's like he either lifts his shirt and you can see bones. He looks at his finger and it's a bone. You're starting to see the indications that it's winding down and it's almost there. So, and that's, I mean, mind you, like, as apparently I always say, different strokes for different folks when it comes to storytelling. However, it has to be a well-executed story that keeps you engaged. And
the point that you're trying to make is the oversaturation and the Easter eggs of everything that goes on with the layering of the story pertaining to nerd culture in D&D and Magic the Gathering is so concentrated that you're looking at everything and trying to find little tidbits while focusing on the anxiety of time and can't focus on the story itself.
Yeah, that's an element of it too.
Yeah, I know.
Like there's a lot of facets to it.
Literally, I was like, oh, there's a sign in the van that says you shall not pass. And it was technically right underneath a picture that looks like Gandalf the Grey that's supposed to be like in front of the Balrog, but it's a dragon. And then next to that is the Pizza Realm, which is Pizza Planet, but because it's for them. And there were all
so there's little... a lot of Easter eggs in this movie. As
that's just the van. I didn't go farther than that. I mean,
there and honestly, no, truly, there is a ton of Easter eggs in this movie.
Shoot, I figured out where the Beholder was. That's a D&D character. He's
yeah, but we're not going to say it because we're not giving spoilers.
No, but he's in there somewhere.
So we're not. We shouldn't even say that because. Okay, so yes, there's.
I didn't even bring up my favorite one. Gosh.
What was your favorite one?
The gelatinous cube. It's so ridiculous, and it's so brilliant, and it's so 70s. Thank you. Thank you, Wizards of the Coast. Gelatinous cube.
All right. So back to the story.
It is part of the story. But again, the oversaturation makes it difficult to focus on the main story of the brothers.
And mind you, that's a great question then for the table. When you are creating a story like this, does the fan service of doing things like this, does it create more of a distraction, or is it more of a helpful aid to the story for you guys? Like, to this level. Because, yes, for the trained eye, like Amy was mentioning earlier, for the trained eye, if you can focus on the story and notice all these different things, then you're going to have a great time. But if you're somebody who's not really fully aware, and there's a lot happening, and there's a lot of elements to the story that are happening as well, with the mom, with the manicore, with the mom's boyfriend, with the brothers, you know, then you got pixies that got their own issues going on, and then the dad, and there's a lot of elements to this story, you know, not to mention Ian's own personal social issues, you know, and Barley's own personal social issues. Does something like this help or hinder the story? What do you guys think?
Oh, I'm happy to go first. So I actually, and I'm going to bring up Ready Player One in the same breath as this, because Ready Player One, on initial impact, if you don't know anything about the story, you don't know where to focus because it is oversaturated with lots of pop culture. But the defining factor in that movie versus Onward is that it's driven by the pop culture taking a backseat to the story of the hunt.
Yeah.
Which is well defined. So in my case, being a big fan, reading the book, everything, I knew what the story was, and I was able to focus on all the Easter eggs. Now with Onward, it was, especially in the open, for the first act, we get it fairly clearly defined. We see the story, we're going along, and then suddenly it's literally like someone goes, "You like potato salad? Here's a whole lot of potato salad." And your little hamburger is just swamped by potato salad. And so you have to essentially start like kind of scooping away all the potato salad to get back to the hamburger. And you can't help but notice that there's bits of celery and or pickles on the top of your burger bun, and your burger is soggy now. So Onward, I know I made a potato salad reference. I'm sorry.
That's quite the reference there.
Yes. So the thing that was frustrating to me was, there are so many stories going on, and the main story, the main focus, the main, you know, the tree that we're supposed to be following branches out in so many different places, and it's so frequent that we can't focus, that you're getting the oversaturation of all of that culture. And even though I'm a part of all that culture and I know where I'm going, for anybody that doesn't play D&D, hasn't watched Lord of the Rings, there's Lord of the Rings jokes left and right all over the place.
Yeah.
There's Magic the Gathering. There is pop culture everywhere in there.
Classic D&D, current D&D references.
It's all over the place. But again, if you're not aware of that, it's just like, what? And you're trying to focus and you can't, which comes to the point of you saying, you know, if you have a skilled and experienced storyteller, they're able to kind of
create a balance
without creating an overcompensation of time as the focus. So you're focusing on time to redirect the problems that you're having with keeping your story afloat when it's being oversaturated by the potato salad of your pop culture.
So
Spencer's turn.
Hold on. I don't know if you really answered it, so I'm just asking. So does it help or does it hinder?
The potato salad?
So it hinders.
Yeah.
Okay, just making sure.
Okay, even I figured that even out. Even for
a skilled eater at a picnic, there was too much potato salad and it hampered my experience of my hamburger.
There you go. Spencer?
Okay, so like I think my brain just kind of like tunnel visioned onto what was important because like I did not notice any of these references. Like I didn't see
them. Well, I have a couple pictures for you.
Like
what?
I don't know. No, I'm laughing at the fact that okay, I mean
he focused on the story, which is great.
Which is great because that means that you were actually like
you were able to focus.
No, I was like, let's go! Let's go! Onward already!
Put it into O for onward. Keep it there.
So would you say then that that kind of thing helps or hinders? Because like, okay, and mind you, I'm not in no way comparing this franchise or this property to this.
He is.
But it's somewhat in the similar city. I don't want to call it like same ballpark because I would hate to put it in the same realm, but like DC. Do you remember when BVS came out and every single DC fan was like, oh no, but you don't get it. Like this is so cool because in this scene, this totally emulates the variant cover of this 1993 Batman episode or whatever, blah, blah, blah. And this scene means this. And you got to be a true fan. Like no, you and I know somebody who told us that we had to have seen all the animated films up until that point so that way we could get all the references as well.
Wait, what?
Yeah, that
Who is this?
That's somebody
off air. I'd like to know.
No.
I have a stick.
but in that frame of reference, the movie was all over the place. But apparently to people who were able to catch all those things, they were able to have a good time. Now, going back to Onward, do you think with everything that was happening outside of that, did it help or did it hinder knowing that there was stuff in there? Or I don't even know if you were aware, like prior to, like if you knew there was going to be Easter eggs and all that kind of stuff in there, but did any of that help or hinder your, you know?
Well, I assumed like, you know, there's probably some in there somewhere, but like my brain was not like processing that kind of information at that time. So they all kind of just flew by me. I didn't see anything you guys are talking about.
It's okay. I'm weird like that. I see all the little things. It's frustrating.
Altogether with the film, I mean, talking about some of the key things, because I know we're kind of running out of time here. What were some of the key takeaways? Like, what were some of the key things that you guys actually had a good time with in terms of the film? Like, for me, one of the things I have to commend the filmmakers for this film, although I think I had this conversation with you, Amy, one of the things I do have to commend, although it's been done before, is their dynamic of the way they resolve the brother situation. I have to admit that was very interesting, and it was a very off the cuff way to do a resolution with these two brothers and the situation they're in. I'm not telling you how, because you have to go see the film to understand what I'm talking about. But I have to appreciate that the way that story wrapped up for those two brothers specifically, the family and everything else. That's a whole different ballgame. But like the way those two brothers and the way that dynamic, you know, wrapped up, it was very indicative of Pixar. Now, was it a unique and original story or original way? No, not necessarily. But it was still a very well done and well executed and actually kind of fun way to wrap up that story arc. What about you, Amy?
I wanted Spencer to go. He got cut off last time.
Oh. Go ahead, Spencer.
I did.
Yes.
I don't remember him, but
yeah, I don't
remember.
You don't remember him?
I don't remember him.
That's
I don't
normal know. Around here.
You know what?
I'm for pancakes after this, buddy. I got you. I remember you.
Spencer, what about you?
Yeah, so
no.
Because I'm trying not to give any spoilers when I say
right?
This.
That's the hard part.
That really is the hard part.
Because the parts that you want to talk about, especially the takeaway parts, most of them contain spoilers. Yeah. You're like, I want to talk about this but I can't.
Okay, so I'm going to attempt to do this. I didn't like the brother's resolution because I felt like it should have had a little bit more to do with their dad.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I see where you're going.
I think that's the fullest extent you can say about
that. As far as
that.
I can go. Yeah. Because, like, I wanted them to, like, pivot.
Okay, I got you.
But like,
I feel like I got to have, like, a cattle prod. Be like, all right, too much.
Yeah, I don't think I can go any further without.
Okay, so that's what you didn't like. What about what you did like?
Oh yeah, we were on did like.
And then people wonder why I was so cynical.
What was good about this movie?
There was air conditioning in the theater.
I thought Tom Holland did a good job at being like anxious teenager because you know that's what he's typecast into. So again, good job. Actually, most of the voice talent in this movie was pretty good, I thought.
Yeah.
There you go.
I like that. That's a good one.
Amy?
So, just like and not dislike, correct?
Yeah. Okay. Spencer does what Spencer do.
Spencer works backwards. It works.
Spencer does what Spencer do. So, go ahead.
So, what I did like about this, even though it was a lot of fan service, I liked the Easter eggs. As I mentioned, there are Lord of the Rings Easter eggs. There's one right off the bat, too, which does not have a picture currently online, but I can tell you off the air because it's kind of a spoiler. Which I thought that was really great. I enjoyed, it's Octavia Spencer, right?
Yes.
Who's the Manticore. She was trying to balance between a couple of vocal performances, especially in that, trying to balance between who she is and who she was. And so her character arc, which fell a little flat, I still kind of enjoyed it because she was part of pacing that actually at the beginning, it was very well paced. Like when we get to her, it's still paced well. I really liked, as ridiculous as it was, the journey-esque, even though it did because of the sun, because of the placement, we see the transitioning of time much quicker, but how they did the, essentially if you were on an epic quest, if it was Lord of the Rings, if this was, you know, the Fellowship and we're going across the meadows and up the mountains, like we had some of those vibes, so I liked some of that aesthetic. And then when it came down to it with that conflict resolution at the end, it is really funny because I didn't see it going the way that it did, and so I actually did like tear up and I was like, oh, you jerks, this is not supposed to happen, versus like I went and saw Coco. I bawled my eyes out. Like, I have no shame.
Yep.
Fine. Frozen 2? No. Didn't bawl, not once. I was forced into that movie. I didn't. Anyway, this one, it reminded me of a lot of things that I love and appreciate about my community and the culture. And if this is a introduction for children to be excited about quests of yore, D&D, RPGs, this gives them the opportunity to explore things that I have always loved. And I think that's one of the better takeaways for the film.
There you go. Well, wrapping this whole thing up, we're going to go around the table and talk about how the film passes or fails and how many monocles. So let's go ahead and I'll kick this off.
Okay.
And then we'll go around the table.
Because he's
this.
Angry.
No, not angry. Just not even close. No, so the film passes for me. It definitely has the Pixar stamp of approval in terms of, you know, hitting a lot of those key things that it usually is supposed to hit. Like Pixar has a very structured way of how they create their stories, and I think this one really does hit that mark, so kudos to them, they pass for that. In terms of how many monocles, that's where it kind of gets in the weeds for me, because of the fact that it's not exactly a great Pixar film. However, it's not a bad one either. So it's kind of in that middle of good, not like just okay, but it's good. So I would say I would give it like a 2.5.
Is that out of 10? Oh, it's out of 5.
It's out of 5.
Sorry, I thought it was out of 10. I was like, give it a C. What's a C?
Give it a C. I give it a 2.5 out of 5 monocles.
Give it a D?
Yeah.
So
no, that's failing. That's a F.
Yeah. I'm not good at math, except when it comes to adding things
we're
on
not,
paper.
Yeah. So it gets half the full amount, 2.5. It's fun. It's engaging. I just don't think it's for me. Spencer, what about you?
Yeah. So this movie passes for me. This one, it's not a bad movie, but yeah, it's not like a super great one either. So I'm going to give it a 3 because like there's things I liked about it, but I think it was just my own anxiety that was just catching up with me during the movie.
Oh.
That's like maybe on another viewing when you have the opportunity for it to not be dark and you can watch it at home.
I know. I was thinking about maybe like whenever it comes to Disney Plus watching again.
There you go.
There you go. And Amy?
Of course it passes for me. Because I am a booger, I'm going to give it a 3.14, 159?
Because we're coming very nice.
Because we're coming up on some padding. It's all irrational. Like the guy said, it's different strokes for different folks.
Did she say like the guy says? Is that what she said? All right, whatever.
But so yeah, it's not when you say Pixar, it's not the first one that comes to your mind, but it's not the one that you're most likely to forget in the pantheon of Pixar. We're looking at you, Good Dinosaur.
Well, me and Spencer can't really speak to that.
Hey, you didn't even remember it at all. So that is the mark of that poor film.
Well, there you go. That about wraps up another awesome episode of the Filmlosophers. Remember, you can catch us on our Facebook page and our Twitter page at twitter.com/filmlosophy101 and on Facebook at facebook.com/filmlosophers. Also, again, you can check us out on any streaming platform, iTunes, Google Play, Libsyn, everywhere. Just look up The Filmlosophers. We want to give out... What's up? You're looking at me weird.
No, continue. Keep talking.
We want to give out another shout-out to all our friends who participated. You got me nervous now. You're looking at me like
okay.
I did something wrong.
I'm sorry.
We want to give another shout-out and a big thank you to all the people who came out to join us for our Monday trivia night over at Oblivion Comics and Coffee, as well as a big shout out to Laura and Neil, the owners of Oblivion Comics and Coffee. We appreciate you and your business. And if you guys get a chance, make sure to support local businesses like them in your local area. And as we said, stay tuned because we have another great announcement coming later this month on an upcoming trivia night next month.
Yeah.
That's sure to bring in hordes of crowds again, just like this one did this past week. So I think I have to agree with Corey when he mentioned that this is the biggest one we've ever had in terms of having to. I don't think we've ever had to turn people away. It's like being the maitre d' at like a really fancy restaurant. Like, sorry, sir, but we have no room for you. So.
Is my mother a hamster and my father smelled of elderberries?
That's a Monty Python reference.
Anyway, Amy, thank you so much for being on the podcast today.
Thanks, Spencer. I really had fun hanging out and being your shield. If he's more of a jerk, let me know. I have things to throw at him.
Oh, great.
Yay.
Amy, where can people find you at?
Well, not
and
at
your
my
podcast.
Yeah. I don't give out my personal information over the air if they want to find me. But you can definitely find the Capeless Crusaders at thecapelesscrusaders.com. That is our hub, our home away from home for everything Capeless Crusaders. You can also find us on the varying social media platforms, The Capeless Crusaders on Instagram and Facebook, and The Capeless Ones on Twitter. We put out one episode a month on the third Monday of the month, and this month we are going to be recording tomorrow, so it'll be a surprise for March! Mostly it's people out of luck.
Is it because you don't know what it is, or is it because you haven't recorded yet?
No, because we're just all out of luck. And we're so lost without you. That's the title. That's one of the titles. But it's good.
All right. Well.
I'm kitschy.
Well, this was a great and fun conversation. And mind you, as always, when it comes to conversations like this, again, thank you, Amy, for being a part of it.
Yeah.
And we really can't wait for the next one. So, yeah. Wrapping this whole thing up, I'm Eddie.
I'm Spence.
I'm Amy.
Class dismissed.